The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
And new undisputed UFC middleweight champion of the world, Michael the Count Bisping.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Okay, we are rolling with another episode of what I like to call, as you like to call, the number one MMA comedy podcast on the planet. Monday afternoon, it's hot. I'm back from New Orleans. Apologies off the bat, by the way, for Thursday's show. A lot of people getting very upset that there was no show on Thursday, which I appreciate the passion. I'm glad that you like it. I'm glad that you care. Took the stuff to New Orleans. Camera, microphone, laptop, all that stuff. Wi-Fi at the hotel was goddamn awful. The hotel was awful, in fact. It was shit. It was the worst hotel I've ever stayed at. And it was on Bourbon Street.
Name and shame. Name and shame.
The Royal Sinesta. Royal Sinesta Hotel. When I looked it up online, because I thought I don't want to stay at like, you know, like a big massive chain of hotels. I want to stay at like a little boutique one, New Orleansy vibe, you know what I'm saying? And I looked at the pictures online and it looked nice. It looked really nice. I'm like, oh, I like this. Rebecca likes antiques. It had a very Art Deco feel to it all. I'm like, this is great. When we get there, man, those pictures did not resemble the hotel at all.
I've stayed in a Royal Sinesta somewhere.
Yeah, there's a few of them around, yeah.
Yeah, in Texas, I believe I stayed in Royal Sinesta. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so it wasn't was not what you wanted. New Orleans, I'm looking at the pictures right now in New Orleans. It does look very nice.
Yeah.
This looks like great. A nice place.
It looks like a great place. And I looked at the reviews, and they said it was great as well. And then a friend of mine, who's a local of New Orleans, was recommending some restaurants. He said there's a restaurant called Restaurant Revolution, or Revolution Restaurant, whichever way around. You got to go to there. And I'm Googling it, and it's attached to the hotel. And I couldn't get in because it was packed out, but I looked through the windows and it was beautiful. And they were the fucking pictures on the website of the restaurant, not of the hotel. You sons of bitches, Royal Sinesta. But still, whatever. We had a good time, Lewis.
So, yeah, maybe, you know what we should do? Because I also took a family, well, I didn't take a family vacation. It was my annual father-son trip. So maybe we should go point for point. So I'll tell you the hotel that I stayed in.
Go ahead.
I stayed in a Residence Inn by Marriott, which is not a fancy hotel.
No, not at all. Not in the slightest. But
guess
still,
how much per night?
Oh, I see. This is another reason. Everything's sold out. Demand is high. Flights are through the roof. It was crazy. I'm going to say, it depends. Myrtle Beach. What's that? Carolinas? One of the Carolinas?
South Carolina. South Carolina.
I don't know. I think prices drop when you say South Carolina, but I'm still good. $235 a night.
$869 per night for a Residence Inn by fucking Marriott.
No.
I swear to God.
Did you pay that? God.
Shout out to Yo Kratom. They hooked it up. My one of my sponsors, they hit me up and they made the reservation for me. And what's funny is that I didn't know if they were paying for it. They just made the reservation. And then I saw how much it cost and I was like, dude, they better have fucking paid for this because it was so expensive. Everything was sold out. I was looking at places for like $400 a night. They were shitholes. I was looking at Airbnbs for like a nice Airbnb. It was going to cost me $1,000 a night. This is like fucking Dubai prices.
Yeah, no, that is insane, but I'm in shock right now because all I'm thinking is Sanibel don't pay for my hotels. Fucking Hemp Fusion don't pick up my tabs when I'm traveling. I'm going to have a word with my agent. Simple as that. Yeah, that is crazy. That's crazy expensive. So anyway, New Orleans was great. I saw your pictures, by the way. It looked very nice. I did have a little bone to pick. You know what I mean?
Apparently, a lot of people have a bone to pick.
I went down to the bayous, right? I had a great tour. We were out there for a few hours. We fed wild alligators and absorbed the nature. It was incredible. Next minute, Lewis is like, oh, you want to do fucking wild animals, do you? Okay. And you take it to another level. It's not a competition, Lewis.
Yeah, so you fed some wild alligators? Yeah,
wild. If you've ever seen alligators in the zoo, shit. In the wild, it's pretty cool.
Dude, let me tell you something. I'm never going to a fucking zoo again after the experience. I went to the Myrtle Beach Safari, and it's not just like, you're not just like seeing these animals. Like, you're interacting with baby tigers and chimpanzees and monkeys. And
looks amazing. I mean,
really cool. It was really cool. Now, here's the thing. I think there is an ethical issue with these places, but I think there's an ethical issue with zoos as well. This is actually the same. It was featured in Tiger King. Doc Antle, the one who had all their wives.
Right,
it was
right.
It was his place. I got to meet him. The experience itself was really cool, but some people were hitting me up afterwards being like, yeah, dude, those places aren't ethical. You know, you're not supposed to be able to pet baby cubs, but dude, the look on my son's face after he was playing with a baby tiger, you could have thrown that baby tiger into a blender afterwards. To give my son that look, it doesn't matter, dude. He was the happiest I've ever seen him.
Yeah, I went to a place in Phuket called Tiger Kingdom. Amazing, same thing. You know, we got tons of pictures with the baby tigers and all the rest of it. And then me and Callum, thinking we're big dogs, so I might have talked about this at the time. If so, I apologize. Mm. We went in and had pictures with full-grown lions, right? Mm. And then the moment we get in there, it's like Will Ferrell on Anchorman when he jumps down to save her from the bears. I immediately regret this decision because we go in and these fucking lions are gigantic, and the people are like, you got to be firm with them. If you're too timid and shaky like that, then they might growl or snap at you or whatever. You've got to be firm when you stroke them. I'm like, just take the picture and get me out of here. I'm feeling like a very bad father right now, because if that thing attacks me, I'm probably going to throw Callum in the way and I'm going to get out of there alive. Okay.
Your instinct is going to kick in. And you're
He's a big time wrestler. Wrestle that motherfucking cat. I'm out of there, bro.
Yeah, listen to me. Bisping's kickboxing is not working against the tiger, but you might be able to wrestle him, Callum. Half Nelson, fucking body slam. Beautiful.
Yeah, you never know. To your point, they are drugged out of their minds. I think that's what's going on. That's where the unethical side comes in, I believe.
I don't think that these – I didn't feel – somebody said that as well. They were like, dude, how drugged up were the animals? I don't think so. They weren't lethargic. They were like actually pretty rambunctious.
High as fuck.
I was high as fuck.
No, the tigers. The tigers. You know, maybe not baby ones. Maybe not the little cubs. Maybe the full-grown ones would have been, though.
Well, they didn't let us interact with any of the full-grown ones. They just sort of like – it was a show. It was a really cool thing. Very expensive, but really, really worth it. And it was very cool. And apparently they do donate a whole bunch of money to conservation efforts. And, you know, like I said, I don't actually know enough to sit here and say, hey, go bring your kids to this. Do your research on it yourself. It was a really cool experience. A lot of people hit me up saying that it was unethical. So, you know, I guess.
Yeah, no. A lot of those places kind of are, I believe. Some of the treatment isn't too good. And some zoos are as well. But some zoos are great. Some zoos do fantastic work for wildlife preservation and conservation. So I think San Diego Zoo is one of the leading zoos. Right. On the planet. And then they do a lot for the breeding programs as well, you know, so you can't tar all zoos with the same brush. But that's it. I don't know too much about zoos, and we're not here to discuss zoos. Let me ask you this, Lewis. Oh, in fact, no, I won't say it like that. I had a funny story at the weekend, and you know where I'm going with this, because we've talked about it, and if you look at me on social media or Twitter, then you know what's going on as well.
This is crazy. It's crazy because listen to me. I've brought up the song 8675309 too many times in front of you, and I thought you were going to hit me.
Yes.
So when I see the story, it made me fucking furious. I'm like, really, Bisping? You lose your temper about a song, but this guy, he gets to fucking just walk all over you?
For the record, the start of my address starts with the numbers 867. And every time that would come up, him and fucking Harrington and Brian Diego, 8675-4321 or whatever. And we're going on and on. Every morning when I'm still having my coffee, while Lewis is walking up and down, screaming on his phone, arguing with people, insulting people, he would stop in between those sentences. Like, you've never heard that song, Bisping? I don't believe it. I'm like, listen, it wasn't a hit. Okay, wasn't a fucking hit. Move on. Forget about the song.
Huge song.
If you mention that one more time, I will hit you. No.
Set us up here. You're enormous.
First of all, New Orleans. We stayed in the French Quarter. Beautiful place. Highly recommend it. Wonderful people. Excellent food. We had a great time. Bourbon Street is an absolute cesspit. I guess you could have gone look at it and check it out, but I didn't want to be there for very long. Lucas was terrified on Bourbon Street. He has never clutched my hand so hard in his life.
And as you do, everyone's just partying and being shitheads in the street. Everyone's
partying and getting shitheads and throwing up and dancing and gyrating and whatnot, you know. But we thought we'd have a little walk down it to see what all the fuss is about. Looks like any town center on a Friday night in England, to be honest. But This is how intimidated and how weird Lucas is. We went into a cathedral that was there just doing the touristy bits. They're like, we got a horse and cart around the city, and the guy, the tour guide, said, you got to go check out the cathedral. It's beautiful. So we had a look in the cathedral, and again, Lucas was terrified. I said, what were you so scared for? He said, I'm more scared here than what I was on Bourbon Street. He was just freaked out because we're not religious and all the praying and stuff. He didn't like it. Anyway, we had a great time. Thank you to everyone that we interacted with. On the final night, we go out for dinner. Beautiful meal. We come out. We're walking down the side street. There's little buskers. We're watching it all. We're having a nice time. Headed back to the hotel. I said, let's just do one last little lap on Bourbon Street, just for a laugh.
It's so funny how often in life you make that decision and then you get into shit because you just made some dumb little decision. You could have just went home.
Well, we could have done. And we did go home, but I'm like, let's just one last time. Let's go for a laugh. You know what I mean? People are enjoying themselves. There's all kinds of scenery and people fucking going in and say, hold on. Oh, yeah. So we're walking along and this is going on. Watch this. So there's like steel drummers playing along. I think it's the one in the middle you need to push. There it is. No sound. Brian. Little woman twerking there for the audio listeners.
Hell yeah.
Look at this guy in a minute. There's a guy. Not him on the drums. But whatever. You get the idea. So there's like a big band breaking out on the street. There's people dancing around. It's like a party carnival atmosphere, right?
They start playing 8675309. Bisping freaks out.
And that was it. That was what pushed me over the edge. No. So, being the typical tourist, it's embarrassing, but whatever. You pull your phone out, you're doing a little Instagram story because it's, you don't see that stuff every day.
It's cool. You're appreciating it.
Yeah, I'm appreciating it. I'm also advertising your shitty little band to my millions of followers. That's what you want. You want exposure. Anyway, this little shit comes up and says, yo, don't film. I said, what do you mean don't film? We're on Bourbon Street, buddy. I'm going to film. So I just carried on filming. And he comes and gets in my face. And he says, I told you, don't film.
Question? Please. This guy is part of the band.
Part of the band, part of their entourage. Didn't have a cymbal or a hi-hat or a drum in his hand, but he was one of their crew.
Oh, he was like the manager.
I don't know if he was the manager, but he was just there. He didn't look like a manager, okay? He looked like he just got out of prison. But still, he's like, you can't film here. And I'm like, listen, I'm going to film, okay? So just deal with it. I'm not going to be bullied by you with my family. Everyone's got cameras out. And anyway.
Now, right now, Ellie and Rebecca Lucas are with you.
Lucas and Ellie, they're just behind me. I'm to the side, and I'm filming.
And do they notice something's going on?
No. At this point, Ellie was almost getting pickpocketed. Seriously, she had a purse over her shoulder and someone tried to unzip her purse. She caught them. So it was all going off on Bourbon Street. Anyway, this guy gets in my face. I told you, don't film. And I said, suck my fucking dick. Okay. Right? Fair enough. Maybe I asked for it.
I'll tell you right now, in the black community, if you tell somebody to suck your dick, it's basically on. That's fight me words.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm not fucking going to stop filming. So I said, suck my fucking dick. And he goes, bang, fucking right hooks me, the little shit. Just there and then, out the blue. Boom, fucking right hooks me, right? Hold on. I can still feel it. Still feel it, the little shit. It was hilarious.
He said nothing. He's like, fuck you, you pussy. He looked you up and down and said, this guy isn't going to do shit.
Exactly, little prick. So he cracks me in the face. But honestly, and I'm not trying to sound tough. Because I've told this story to a few people. I'm not trying to sound hard. I'm not trying to sound tough. But it was hilarious. It was the softest punch I've ever felt in my life. Now, granted, of course, I've, for the last 20 years of my life, I've been getting punched in the face professionally. In fact, probably 30 years of my life. So I can take a punch. But this was particularly bad. So when he hit me, because he was acting so hard and he was in my face and he was acting all intimidated with his chest puffing, he made it clear that he was going to do something. And I didn't really think he would.
Right.
So when he hit me and it was so soft, I instinctively just started laughing my head off in hysterics. It wasn't planned. I wasn't posturing. I literally just started laughing at him. I was like, oh my God, is that it? And then I looked around and Rebecca was a little concerned. So I just walked away. I wasn't going to start getting into a brawl in the middle of Bourbon Street with a bunch of guys. I would have had a fucking couple of cymbals and hi-hats smashed over my head.
Yeah.
And next minute, a fucking, I don't know, bass drum over my head as well, you know. So I just walked off, but I was very, very, very happy with myself, Lewis. Very mature these days.
Very mature. I mean, also very smart, understanding your surroundings. You know, he's with a bunch of people. You're with your family. You know, it doesn't matter how fucking tough you are. You don't want to even, you know, put yourself into a situation where somebody can get hurt. I get it.
No.
That's my biggest concern all the time. I'm just so concerned that somebody's going to fuck with me in front of my son, and I'm going to have to, like, be in that moment of, like, what do I do? And you, I mean, you're so, being a former UFC champion, you know, being a professional fighter, it already gives, you don't have any of that question in your mind, right? Like, you know, you can protect your family. You know, you can protect yourself. Like, that, even the punch, you gauge how hard it was. You're like, it's not even worth getting into it. But I think the average man has a little bit more of a struggle. They're not as confident or as comfortable in their own skin in that environment or any environment.
Yeah, I mean, you are correct to a certain degree. I mean, I don't think that I can walk around unchallenged. I mean, certainly in this day and age, people have weapons, gun crime is through the roof. You know, they could have easily just stuck a knife in my side. I wouldn't have known anything about it. As I said, someone was trying to pickpocket Ellie. They were trying to open her purse and she caught them. That could have easily just been a knife in the side. So I was like, it ain't worth it. I'm not gonna die here on Bourbon Street just because somebody slapped me in the face very, very gently.
Did you have a conscious thought like, you know what, let me just walk away from this? Or was it more like just, it just happened and then afterwards you thought about it?
No, he hit me. I laughed and I was like, come on, let's get out of here. This guy's a loser. He's looking for trouble. Do you know what I mean? They're all going to piss in the same pot. They're all going to be looking for trouble. I guarantee if I'd have hit one, as I say, I would have been fucking drummed to death. Fucking.
How many? Because they look like kids. They look like a high school band, right?
How many of them? High schoolers, Lewis.
You know.
And listen, they were very big. They were very muscular. They looked like the toughest band on this fucking planet.
For the audio listeners, everyone in there, it was like Francis Ngannou, Cyril Gane, Derek Lewis. I mean, every one of that was crazy, dude. Just muscles on top of muscles.
Big guys. Don't like to talk. Must have been 15, 16 of them as well. No, he hit me. And I was like, as I said, Lucas was already kind of a little on edge on that street because there's so much going on, sensory overload, people dancing, people throwing up, people just having fun and singing. But when you're 11 years old, you haven't seen that kind of behavior. So I was like, just get out of here. Come on. This isn't good for the family.
Of course. You know, here's the thing, because at this point, I bet you he has seen this because now it's very publicized. It's been a couple of media outlets picked it up. I guarantee it. But he's not going to go like, oh, what a fucking idiot I feel like. He's going to go, hey, everyone, I just punched a former UFC middleweight champion in the face and he didn't do shit. He got so much street cred from you advertising this that I think it had an adverse effect.
Devil's avocado.
Please.
I just punched a former UFC middleweight champion in the face and he laughed in hysterics at how much of a bitch I was with my punching power. You know what I mean? It depends which angle you're looking at it from, Lewis.
His version is you started crying hysterically. You say laughing, he says crying.
It was the best thing to happen to me in New Orleans. I have not laughed. I swear to God, I was on such a high after that. It was so funny. It really was. You know, I didn't want to talk about this, but it's kind of relevant and it's all over the place. So I don't really think I'm throwing Joe Schilling under a bus. Do you know what I'm referring to?
No, I don't. What up with Joe Schilling?
Yeah. Well, Harrington, you come on and explain. I don't want it to come from my words, and then we'll kind of elaborate from there. Well, fuck it. I don't know what Harrington's doing. Hello, Harrington. How are you? Microphone, please.
Yeah, I'm right here, but I don't know this story. So I wish I could be more help. I was trying to Google it.
You put it in the notes. It's in the notes, Joe Schilling.
Here, let me check.
I'm telling you, maybe it's in the notes. Hold on. If it's not in the notes, maybe that punch was harder than what I thought.
I have the video if you guys want to just jump in.
Yeah, okay. Well, let me just preface it for the audio listeners. All right, maybe it's not in the notes, but Joe Schilling, I get back last night and I'm looking at Instagram. I'm sitting on the couch. I have a little glass of wine before we go to bed. And there's a video of him in a bar last night. And this is everywhere now. It's all over the MMA websites and all over because I wasn't going to talk about it because I don't want him to get in trouble. But he goes off to the bathroom and he walks back. There's a guy. The guy's wasted. And he's
that was Joe Schilling?
You saw the video, right?
I saw the video. I had no idea that was Joe Schilling.
That was Joe Schilling. Yeah. Well-known professional fighter. Here's the video right here. Oh. And then the guy's out, unconscious, wasn't moving for a while. Now, on Instagram last night, and as I say, the only reason I would talk about this is because it is everywhere now. It's gone viral. So, you know, I'm sure there's other people talking about it. But he said on his Instagram, which has, I think, been deleted or taken down by Instagram, he said, I'm going to give you some context here. He was rapping away all the songs, you know, and in these songs, they use the N-word a lot. And he was saying the N-word, apparently, and looking at certain people that were black in the crowd, apparently, and emphasizing the N-word and stuff like that. You know, so he was being offensive. The guy was hammered drunk. So, yeah, he went off to the bathroom. When he came back, boom, hit him with those 2-3 punches and put him out like a light.
I mean, even if that's the story, look, dude, the guy's fucking drunk, being an idiot at a bar, singing a rap song with the N-word. You can't fucking lay him out for it.
No.
That's crazy. I mean, like even if the guy's a dick.
He got punched in the face and walked away.
Yeah, dude. I mean, Jesus Christ, dude. Look, I like Joe Schilling. I don't know
him. He's great. He's a really, really nice guy. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah, but that's why I was careful not to. I didn't want to talk about it, but then this morning, because last night I saw it and I was like, got to talk about this on the podcast. And then I was like, no, I don't want to advertise it further. But then when I got out of bed today, it's all over. I follow a lot of MMA accounts on Twitter. They're all talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, look, dude, the guy is... It's just that, you know, whatever. I mean, look, maybe Joe Schilling's hammered too. People do stupid shit sometimes. You know, people make mistakes. I think it's a mistake on Joe Schilling. Not saying that he wasn't morally justified in doing it. It's a mistake because he's a professional fighter. He will be judged as a professional fighter. He's probably going to get sued. He'll probably get to, you know, deal with some shit with Bellator. Is he still signed with Bellator? You know, it's not. It just isn't the best. Even if he's justified in the sort of the moral side of it, it just isn't the best look for him. And, you know, you got to control yourself in those situations. We watched it happen a lot with fighters where they lose control, Conor being the biggest and most famous of them. And, you know, it doesn't, and Joe Schilling doesn't have Conor money. So
No, he doesn't. And I hope he doesn't get sued, because unfortunately that is the culture that we live in. And certainly if you've got some kind of spotlight on you and you're a professional like him, you know, fingers crossed it doesn't go down that path. But I remember, it reminds me, and this is kind of what he would be dealing with. When I was 16, I got into a fight. I got into a lot of fights when I was a kid, but I got arrested for one at 16. And it was self-defense. The guy was being a dickhead, but whatever. I'm not going to go into the details because it's not important. But I ended up getting charged by the police, and I went to court. And when I went to court, and this is the relevant part, I put my case forward. I said, you know, he was starting on me. He was in my face, and he looked like he wanted to fight and all the rest of it. So I punched him. And the judge said, because of your martial arts training, you perceive levels of threats differently from the average man. And it's actually a fair point. It's not a bad point, because you're a trained professional. You're used to this. You're used to a combat environment, you know, whereas the average guy isn't, and would kind of panic in those situations. Therefore, you know, I don't know, maybe they get scared or whatever, and they might lash out or whatever. If you're used to that, it's not really an excuse. So that's what the judge said, and he kind of had a point. Not that I'm trying to throw Joe Schilling under a bus, because he's a fucking solid guy, and maybe that guy was a total dickhead. He looked like a dickhead. He looked like a douchebag. But I don't think he deserved to get knocked out, though.
Yeah, he looked like a fucking asshole. He looked like he was just being sort of a hammered, you know, fucking cryptocurrency bro, like after work and hammered during karaoke, you know. But at the same time, like, that's a guy, yeah, you give him a little slap. Maybe that's where you go, right? You don't got to knock him out. You don't got to fucking give him a fucking hook, uppercut. I mean, he was really going for it. It's not the last minute of a title fight, Joe.
Yeah, no, exactly. He really went for it. You know what I mean? Oh, God. Yeah, so anyway, I hope that all works out. So there you go. Should we move on? Or anything worth discussing in Myrtle Beach other than the Tigers? $800 for a residence in.
Yeah, residence in. It was fucking crazy. It was nuts. Everything was expensive. You know what my son did that I was... I mean, I went up with him. Have you ever seen these? They're all over malls. You'll see them over boardwalks too. They're like those skywalks where you go up and you're strapped to a harness.
Yeah.
And it's like a little bridge, or it'll be a rope. And then I always see them and I'm like, oh, that looks kind of fun from the ground. I'm like, that's cool. Me and my son went up to do one. We got
terrifying.
I didn't even go down. I didn't take one step onto a platform. I was like, yeah, I'm going back down. No fucking way. My son, back and forth all over them. And he was afraid, but he just wanted to do it. He was really, really scared at certain points. But he was up 50, 60 feet in the air, like just on this little harness thing, dude. And I'm the whole time freaking out. The whole time it was miserable, the whole experience. And he loved it. I was like, at one point, he just wanted to keep going. I was like, James, get down. I got mad. I was like, get down. We got to stop. I can't watch you fucking almost die for the next hour. This sucks.
that's the beauty of youth, isn't it? Because you're just oblivious to the dangers. You know, Lucas is always doing something dumb. Like even at the airport, he's like, instead of going up the escalator, he's hanging onto the side and then walking up the thing. I'm like, if you fall, you're going to fall down that escalator and they're hard steps. You really you just don't see danger in stuff. So you go up there as a grown man or almost a grown man. And you're like, hold on, this is dangerous. These are carnies. I guarantee there's not health and safety checks.
It's all 16-year-old kids that are shapping us in.
Yeah, they're all high. They're smoking weed. They're running this thing. You know, you're like, yeah, this looks kind of dangerous. But when you're, what's James, 6, 7?
8.
You don't realize it at 8 years old, you know? It's the beauty of youth. I tell you what, in New Orleans, it was impossible to get into a restaurant or anything like that. The fucking lines for every restaurant was just insane. We spent most of the time just wandering around trying to find somewhere to eat. Couldn't get reservations, so you had to try and chance it on the day. And we went into one place right on the corner, and we Googled it, and the Yelp reviews were fantastic. Desire. Don't go there. It was awful. It was gross. The worst food I ever had. The cutlery was dirty. The glasses were dirty. It was just fucking garbage. But that's how we started our first night. But it got better from there until the last night when I got assaulted. But still, there you go. Did love it. Loved it. New Orleans is great. Lovely.
It was the
people.
Same thing with us, because I'm not a make a reservations in advance guy. I'm like, oh, I should make a reservation for tonight 2 hours before I want a reservation. So it's the same thing. So we only ended up eating at like one really nice restaurant. It was called 21 Main at North Beach. Amazing steakhouse. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. But beyond that, it was just like, you know, whatever. The hotel actually had decent breakfast. They had decent bar food there. The water in New Orleans in... Oh yeah, Harrington, you were just down in South Carolina.
Yeah, his brother's wedding.
Is that where you ate for your brother's bachelor party?
Yeah. We were actually staying at like the hotel behind where 21 Main is, and we just made reservations at that steakhouse the last night. It's pricey, but it was nice.
Oh, I thought it was classy as fuck. I ate at the same place as Harrington. I was like, forget it. Just can you edit that whole section?
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Harrington went there with his whole cruise. Not that nice. I had some good meals, but it was a little bit too fancy because a friend of mine recommended some places. He said, I could pull some strings, get you in. Yeah, it was a little too expensive, a little too pricey for my liking. We just want nice. We want good food, but I don't want it all snobby. It was very snobby. There was one place, I won't say the name, but it was delicious. The people were nice, but tiny little things, very snobby, hoity-toity. Anyway, moving on. UFC action at the weekend. Cyril Gane taking on Alexander Volkov in the main event. And this is actually very relevant to some breaking news that we have right now. If you're on Twitter at the time of our recording, then you might know about it. But let's get into the fight. Cyril Gane, Volkov. Volkov, as we know, very tall, excellent karate stylist, good striker, beautiful kicks. Cyril Gane, what is he? I think he's 6-0 or 9-0, 8-0, something like that. He's very early in his career, very gifted, very athletic. You know, you take one look at him, you can see the guy's a special physical specimen. And he was just too much for Volkov. He was composed the whole way through. He picked his shots. You know, he had a nice array of strikes, wasn't predictable, good movement, explosive, started off slow, picked up the pace as it went on. I think in round four, Volkov had a little bit of success, but it was a really good performance for Cyril Gane. Good performance, great fight, good performance. Volkov looked dangerous on a few occasions here and there, but Cyril Gane, man, for how early he is and how young in his UFC career, he's just doing such fantastic things. It's insane.
Yeah, he's coming along really nicely. And whatever it is, the hype train or whatever it is, the UFC, they seem to be bringing him along very, very nicely. He is undefeated. I think this is the first time that anybody's asked him about the possibility of fighting Ngannou. But the fact that that conversation's even happening right now, I think it says a lot as to where Cyril Gane is in sort of both the MMA community's mind and the UFC's mind.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And he went out there Saturday night and Volkov's been around for a while. He was a former Bellator champion. He's a big man. He's a good fighter. He's a seasoned veteran. And Gane beat him. You know, listen, he didn't finish him. You know, he didn't necessarily beat the living daylights out of him, but it was a clear decision victory. And as I say, showed a lot of promise when he let the hands go on a few occasions, when he kind of went for the kill, he looked very, very dangerous, super explosive, very athletic. As I say, throwing flying knees on someone the height of Volkov. I mean, that just shows you how bloody athletic this guy is.
I mean, that's I don't want to say a knock on him, but he, what is it? How many? I think three or four of his wins in the UFC have come by way of decision so far. I just feel like for a heavyweight, you almost want to see him start to rack up those knockouts. And he's a very intelligent fighter. Obviously, maybe the highest level kickboxer or striker in the heavyweight division. But you just you kind of want to see him knock guys out. I was expecting a knockout on Saturday night.
Yeah, I somewhat agree with what you're saying. Certainly, as in the heavyweight division, that's what captures the imagination. That's what people want to tune in for. That's why you want to watch heavyweights, because they have that true one-punch knockout power. Now, of course, he has it, but he was just being smart. He was being careful. I'm sure he could punch somebody full power and knock him out. I'm sure he hits harder than the guy that assaulted me on Bourbon Street. That's a fact. But he does play it a little safe, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful to him, but you know, I agree that would be somewhat of a knock. Certainly coming back after the last fight against Rozenstruik, which was, you know, it was an uneventful fight, but still, Rozenstruik is a bloody good fighter, so he did well to win that fight. But still, I don't want to knock it. He looked great. He looked sensational. And now today, breaking news, because he was asked about fighting Francis Ngannou, of course. Well, Francis is from, I think it's Cameroon. Francis is from Cameroon, but he lived in France for a long time, lived in Paris, and that's where he started his MMA career, I believe. Cyril is French, so they knew each other. They used to be training partners, I think. And he said, you know, in the past, I don't think he was open to it, but now he's like, oh, yeah, I'd fight Francis if it's for the belt. Well, today it's just come out. Right now, Brett Okamoto reported Cyril Gane fighting Derek Lewis for the interim heavyweight title.
Is that true?
It is true. Yes. Harrington,
is that confirmed?
Well, it's confirmed from the side of Cyril Gane, I believe. I forwarded it to Harrington. Harrington, I haven't got it in front of me. Obviously, I'm doing a podcast. Can you just read out the succession of tweets from Brett Okamoto? In fact, fuck it. I'll do it, unless you want to do it.
I mean, really, either one works. I was just looking to see if I could find further confirmation. But yeah, I mean, the quote from Brett Okamoto is that Cyril Gane, sorry, it's just loading. Derek Lewis, the BFC.
I got it. Okay. Derek Lewis will face Cyril Gane in an interim heavyweight title fight in the main event of UFC 265 on August 7th in Houston. Per Ngannou's agent, Markel Martin, this comes as a complete shock to make an interim title so soon. If you look at the history of the division, it comes as a surprise. We hope to get clarity and figure out something with the UFC soon. Another tweet, just to be clear, the creation of an interim title on August 7th will not impact Ngannou's status as the undisputed champion, which it shouldn't. But yeah, there you go. I think Ngannou just fought in March, so it's a little surprising, but there is a backlog there. Sorry, you were going to say.
No. What's the problem with Ngannou right now? I'm sorry. Did I miss that he was injured?
No, I don't think he's injured. He was supposed to fight John Jones, remember? There was that whole thing. And then they were going to do Derek Lewis.
I thought that was all but signed.
So did I. That's what I thought. I thought that's what was going to happen. I don't know what's going on. But I did see, and again, I'm speculating. Harrington, if you can add to it, feel free. But I did see that I saw maybe something that Francis was holding out to fight John Jones. You know what I mean? That he wants the Jones fight as well. So if they're both posturing on one side of another and they're holding out for one another, then I guess Dana's like, well, we'll just move on and do an interim title fight until you figure that shit out.
And not for nothing, to be honest with you, it doesn't, I hate an interim belt unless it's over a year. And we talked about this many times. I think there should be strict criteria. You're out a year, interim belt comes in, you know, at that point you're good, right? But not for nothing, I do sort of like this interim belt between these two, specifically because, you know, Lewis, he had that lackluster fight against Ngannou in the past. I feel like everyone was so excited about John Jones being the number one contender. And I almost feel like it was almost like it took a little bit of steam out of when it was going to be Lewis. It felt like it was a downgrade. It felt like the heavyweight title fight was a downgrade. And it was almost, I felt bad for Lewis. I felt bad for Ngannou. I feel like right now, if Lewis and Cyril Gane fight for the interim title, you have this title versus title, two monstrosities, you know, these guys come in. I feel like it just does a little bit better for the actual fight because it felt like a downgrade from the John Jones and Ngannou fight.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess anything would feel like a downgrade because John Jones, you know.
Well, because it is.
It is a fucking downgrade. Yeah, yeah. There you go. I mean, think about it. John Jones, greatest fighter that's ever stepped foot in the octagon. Debatable. Francis Ngannou, the scariest fighter to step foot in the octagon. Probably also debatable, but probably accurate. I mean, he's got the punching power of a Ford Cortina going 90 miles an hour. We know this. But, you know,
Nissan Altima going 37 miles per hour southwest on the highway.
A Range Rover being towed by a Morris Minor. You know what a Morris Minor is?
No, but that's hilarious.
A Morris Minor is a little three-wheeled car. If you want to Google Morris Minors, they were a car in England. They only had three wheels, and you only needed a motorcycle license to drive them. Morris Minors, yeah. So a Range Rover being towed by a Morris Minor, that's how hard Francis hits. No, anyway, what was I saying? Yeah, it's a shame. Derrick Lewis versus Ngannou. I wanted to see that, but we have seen that before. Listen, at the end of the day, what is an interim title holder? The number one contender. So Lewis is right there. He deserves to be fighting for the belt. Gone. Maybe. He's working his way up. He's beating people. He's beating Rose.
6-0 in the UFC. I didn't realize he had six fights in the UFC already.
That's crazy. 6-0 in the UFC. So he's doing that. Yeah. So he, you know, based on the back of that resume at heavyweight and the people that he's beating, Volkov, Rosenstroik, and I forget some of the others. So yeah, you can make that argument. So anyway, that's interesting. Interesting. See how that all plays out.
Very interesting. I'm excited to watch it. Wait, I'm sorry.
Co-main event. I'll get into the co-main event while you chin wag away to the guest off camera.
Sorry, Lewis, it's in the fridge on the bottom shelf.
Just tell her never to interrupt the podcast again, please. You know, whoever it is.
Hey, Mike, real quick, let's take a moment and thank Paleo Valley for supporting today's show. I really do love Paleo Valley beef snacks. If you're on a high-protein, low-carb diet, everyone knows beef jerky is probably already a part of your diet. You go to the gas station, you grab whatever you can get. It's quick. It's in a bag. It's convenient. Obviously, that's great. I'll tell you right now, a lot of the stuff you're eating with those things that you buy at the gas station are not healthy. There's a lot of fillers. There's a lot of the stuff that's not really good for your body. It's not all natural. And that's where Paleo Valley comes in, Mike.
Yeah, well, listen, the stuff you're talking about there at the gas station is full of crap, let's be honest. We could list them. We could go through them. But all you need to know is it's not good for you. There's a lot of chemicals. There's mechanically separated chicken. There's hormones. There's GMOs. There's a lot of shit that everybody in this day and age should be trying to avoid. That's where the 100% grass-fed beef sticks from Paleo Valley come in. These things are delicious. They don't have the hormones. They don't have the MSG. And they contain a lot of vitamins A, D, E, and K. So listen, it's good on the go. It's delicious. It tastes good. It's cheap. We've got a great offer for you. We're going to knock some money off. And it's a good, healthy snack. I'm trying to lose weight. I was just in New Orleans. I put a little bit of weight on. I ate a lot of food. I might have drank a little bit. I'm going to be Paleo Valleying all week to the max. Maybe a little salad thrown in here and there. Listen, at the end of the day, why is grass-fed beef so important? Well, 100% grass-fed beef contains more calcium, magnesium, potassium, zinc, phosphorus, beta-carotene, and iron than grain-fed beef. At the end of the day, you're on the go. You haven't got time to cook. You just go to the kitchen drawer like I do. You slide that bad boy open. You pull it out. There it is. 100% grass-fed beef stick. No carbs. No nonsense. You just eat that bad boy and off you pop. Good for you. Good for the kids. If you've got a lazy wife like me, we're raising the kids on Paleo Valley grass-fed beef sticks, okay? They are the leanest, healthiest kids you've ever seen in your life, Lewis.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, your kids are jacked. Everyone thinks that in your neighborhood. Your wife.
They're on steroids.
Your wife doesn't cook. She's just giving three meals a day, beef sticks.
Everyone thinks Lucas is on steroids. I'm like, no, I'm just feeding him Paleo Valley grass-fed beef sticks. So if you want to also abuse your children, but you want to save 15% whilst doing so, go to paleovalley.com. Of course, we're messing around like always, but these things, they're great. They taste delicious. That's the main thing. Taste delicious. They're good for you. No chemicals, no crap. Go to paleovalley.com and use the code BELIEVE15. What's that going to do? It's going to get you 15% off your first order. These are great snacks on the go. They are convenient health snacks. Good for you. Good for kids. And they're full of probiotics, which aid in digestion and gut health. Paleovalley.com, one more time, is the website. BELIEVE15, 15% off your first order. You're welcome. Okay, where were we? What was I saying? Oh, yeah, co-main event, OSP, Tanner Boza. Was that the call? Yeah, that was a co-main event. Good fight. Tanner Boza looked sensational. He was so goddamn fast, so fast. Finished him in the second round. Nice little combination. the controversy comes in for anyone that watched the fight. They're saying that Tanner Bowser grabbed the fence. OSP took him down. OSP had a very, very difficult first round. Bowser was too fast. He was too sharp. A lot of in and out movement. The guy was fighting like he was on bloody fast forward. He looked sensational, looked very, very fast. And everyone, you could see if OSP was going to have any success, he was going to need to take him down. And he did that in the second round. He took him down at the start of the second round, got a nice position, and then Bowser worked back to his feet. But as he was getting up, the controversy is that he grabbed the fence. And if we look at it here, can we press play on the video?
Look for yourself here, and you can be the judge for yourself. We don't think he grabbed
it's
the fence.
His knuckles.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have a definitive look at it right there, so I'm not saying there was. Take a look for yourself here.
So the controversy comes in. Of course, there's always controversy if somebody grabs the fence. That should be a foul. It should be a warning from the referee, potential point deducted. But what happened was he got up, and then immediately after getting up, he finished him. Well, you know, it wasn't immediate. You know, that wasn't the reason he finished him, but he got up and then finished him. So now OSP, I believe, has put in an official appeal to the Nevada Commission trying to have the fight overturned. It's not a good look. And I don't even think it was a fence grab. If you look at it there, I think he had his fist closed and just like used it to kind of lean and push on. But Harrington, go on. Look. What do you think?
I mean, yeah, look, I mean, at the very, we've seen real fence grabs. And not for nothing, I mean, it just sucks. Like, yeah, I get what's going on in the moment. Even if he grabbed the fence, even if he got a big old hand on that fence, and he got up, and the ref didn't stop it in that moment, and the ref didn't warn him. Well, that's what happened. That's where the chips fell in that fight in that moment. The ref didn't catch him. The ref didn't say anything. You can't really appeal it after the fact. I mean, have we ever seen anybody actually win an appeal like that? I don't think so.
It's very, very rare. I think it has happened once or twice. But yeah, he got up, and then he finished him, but it wasn't like instant. It wasn't like as he got up, he turned and went bang, and that kind of started the sequence. He got up, reset, landed a combo and put him away, you know. So as I say, I like OSP. He's a great fighter. He's a good person, but it's not the best look. You just got to take it. It is what it is. Harrington, you were going to say something. You came on looking rather confused.
Yeah. So from what the statement OSP made after, he said, you know, it might have been a fence grab, might not have been a fence grab. That's not the thing he was appealing. He said that the referee came in and put his hand on his back as to like separate the action because he thought it was a fence grab. And OSP at that point, like, let go. And then that led to Boozer turning, like changing the tide. So he's saying it's not even necessarily on what Boozer did, but on what the referee did with the indecision.
Boozer. Say it with me, Harrington. Tanner Bowser.
Tanner Bowser.
There you go.
Yeah, Harrington. Harrington, you loser.
You boozer. No, listen, no, that's a good input because I never read his statement. So, again, I mean, yeah, listen, he's pissed off. He feels it should have went a different way, but I don't think he's going to be successful with that. And then what have we got? Oh, Daniel Pineda, Andre Feely. Andre Feely looked amazing. He looked so good. He went out there. He was beating Daniel Pineda all over the place. Dropped him a couple of times, I think, in the first round. And then in the second round, poked him in the eye. I forget. I was trying to talk about the sequence. I forget the sequence. But regardless, he had a cut open above his eye. And then he poked him in the eye by accident. Just in the, you know, it happens. And Daniel Pineda was protesting big time. And even Andre Feely was like, no, it was an accident because it looked like the fight was going to get called off. And Pineda saying, listen, I'm good. And he couldn't open his eye. He's like this. He couldn't open his eye. And he's like, the doctor's like, open your eye. He's like, I am. But the eye wasn't open. And he's like, open your eye. He's like, I am. He said, you're not opening your eye. And he said, right. So then he covered the other eye. And he's like, how many fingers am I holding up? And Pineda says, one. He says one, and then he did it again, and then at this time he holds up one finger, and I don't know, this time he said three or whatever, I forget what he said, but I mean, God bless him, he tried. Yeah. He's like, fuck it. he was guessing.
What isn't that a scene in Rocky where he like taps him on the back?
No, he says, I'm seeing three of them. He's like, hit the one in the middle.
No, but maybe there's definitely a scene in a boxing movie where he can't see and he taps him on the back to let him know how many fingers he's holding up.
Oh, really?
Like his coach, yeah, like taps him.
Well, no, because I don't know. I don't remember that. And I am an aficionado of the Rocky movies.
You're also an aficionado of fighting with one eye. What are you talking about?
Yeah. I have a lot to say on this matter. No.
You're like the one guy who can speak on this subject better than anybody in the world.
When it first happened, when I first came back, you know, and I was hiding the extent of the eye injury, I was always terrified because you do a training camp. And then before the weigh-ins, you got to see a doctor, a local doctor, you know what I mean? And they might take one look at your eye and say, nope, this is done. And I remember it was when I fought Tim Kennedy in Quebec City, Quebec, on a Wednesday night. What a shitty fucking show that was. Fortunately, no one watched it Wednesday night. Who the fuck cares about that?
Well, that's when the fight nights used to be Wednesdays. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I was like, fucking hell, because now I have this jazzy eyepiece. I didn't have that before. Do you know what I mean? And it looked bad. I mean, I don't know how I got past those doctors, because one look at my eye, you could clearly see it was fucked. So anyway, but I said to Perillo, we developed this little system. I said, when I go in to see the doctor, when he comes in, when he comes to the park, because he's going to cover up my eye and then say, how many fingers? Or maybe he will, you know, because I thought he's going to look at the eye and say, can you see? And when I say, yeah, he'll say, well, let me just check. So he'll cover up my good eye and then do that, right? So I said, when he does that, if he holds up one, you cough. If he holds up two, oh, just give it a little yawn and so on and so forth. So we developed this system, which we never had to put in place. The doctor just went, you can see out of that, can you? I went, yeah. He went, okay. And that was that. So, but still, Daniel also Pineda. Daniel
the
Pineda.
System would not have worked. You would have been caught in a heartbeat.
No, I don't know. I don't What? But Perillo can't yawn at that moment in time.
Perillo, he's stoned out of his mind. He's fucking
I know. That was my one thing. I'm like, listen, Jason, you've had a few beers last night. Let's get this fucking system right. Let's get it nailed down, okay? Because don't be fucking getting it wrong. You know, a little tap of the foot is three, a fucking is five, you know, a yawn is two. Yeah. Is one, maybe a sneeze, you know what
it's
I mean?
Like counting cards, that's the way they did
it. Yeah, I'm like, come on, Jason, don't get this
thank
wrong.
Thank you for the fact checking. Harrington comes in, Stitch did it to Creed in Creed, the first Creed movie. Yeah,
that's what I was thinking of. There you go. So, not Rocky, not
so because of what it was almost like a nod to the scene where he's like, hit the one in the middle and he's like, cut me, Mick. So, his eye was all messed up. So, instead, when the ref came over,
I see. Great,
by the way, I love there's not a single Rocky movie, including all the Creeds, front to back. Every single Rocky movie I love, there's not a bad one in the bunch.
I'm trying to think if I agree. 1 to 5, yes. They're all awesome. Rocky Balboa.
Loved it after Adrian died.
Not as awesome. Not as awesome. Come on.
Come on, dude.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, good shit. 1, 2, 3, really good. 4, even better. 5, I loved it as a teenager. I watched it a lot. It started going
down
the
cheese. People hate on 5. It was fucking
great,
dude.
They hate 5.
It was great.
I love Rocky V. Rocky Balboa, it wasn't as good as those, shall we say. Still a good movie. But
and there was so long. I grew up on the Rocky movies, so there was so long between Rocky V and Rocky Balboa. It's like, what, 25 years or whatever, that it was such a buildup. So I understand maybe not loving it as much as the other ones, but it was great. And the Creed movies are great, too. The whole series is awesome. I really love them.
Yeah, no, me too. Well done, Sly. All right, switching gears. So well done to everyone that fought on one Saturday night and to those people that lost. Well, you'll be back. Harrington, how can I help you? You gotta have your microphone in your hand. For the audio listeners, Harrington comes on, so the screen changes, and then he looks there like he's got something to say, but you don't have the microphone in your hand. Next time, come on, have the microphone ready, poised, ready to go. No dead air. Rule 101. Go ahead.
Okay, so there's one more thing from this card that I've seen a lot of news outlets reporting on, and I think something people would be interested in. I don't know if you saw this, Jordan Janes, who's a fighter on the card this weekend. Justin Janes. He bet his entire purse, $25,000, on himself, and he lost.
And lost. Yeah, no. and he was an underdog as well.
It was what was the odds? 45 underdog.
So he was a pretty sizable underdog. I mean, that's gangster, that's ballsy, but not the smartest thing. I mean, the thing is, as fighters, we all think we're going to win. We all do. We all think we're going to win. That's why when, regardless of your purse, they're not always 50-50, but when you start in the organization, 50% to show. Well, no, you get showman and you get a bonus if you win. You know, but you always think you're going to win. So you count that money in your head and then you lose. And unfortunately, you're backstage, you're in your locker room, you're pissed off, you're upset. And then they come in and give you your check and it's half the size of what you expected it to be. And that's like the final twist of the knife, but that's combat sports. But if you want to be a fucking numpty, no offense, Jordan, Justin Janes, I mean, God bless you. I admire the balls on you, but I would not be doing that.
So I'll say this. Yes, and I agree. Stupid move. Very dumb move. However.
No, however, not dumb. I didn't say dumb. You said, I agree. Very dumb. I didn't say that. I said, okay. I wouldn't have done that. And I said, very ballsy, but I wouldn't have done that. I've got a family, man. So I've got a wife. I've got three kids. I've got bills. I've got lawsuits. I've got dogs to put down. You know what I mean? These things aren't free. You know, I would not have done that.
Lost a split decision too. That sucks.
So close.
That burns more. I'd rather get knocked out and then realize a day later that I lost $25,000.
Motherfucker, you're like, you're there as a referee, judge such and such says blah 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 blah, and you'd be like, come on, come on, come on, motherfucker, so close.
That's awful. So here's the thing I'll say, in devil's advocate, devil's avocado. You know, we are discussing this on the number one MMA comedy podcast in the world. The MMA media, the MMA media outlets have picked up on it. People are talking about it. This is a name that I probably wouldn't have been discussing on this show. Harrington stopped our show. We were going to move on to bring it back up on this show. The value overall for, what's his name, Justin James, for his career overall with this story, this very interesting story, probably is worth more than the $25,000 that he lost.
Devil's avocado. I disagree because we're all talking about him losing the fight. That stings. You want him making the news, making the headlines, people talking about you when you win a fight or you book a fight. You know, when you lose a fight, all right, he's getting a little bit of PR, maybe for the wrong reasons. But I'll say this. Harrington, come back on. Show yourself. Microphone in hand, please. Ready to rock. Ready to answer. Microphone in hand. There you go. Ask me a question. Ask me. Stop coming on and off. Stay on. Ask me a question. Ask me, why do you, Michael, why did you not bring up that story? Ask Michael, me why.
Michael, why did you not bring up that story?
And ask Lewis why he didn't bring up that story.
Lewis, why didn't you bring up that story?
I'm going to speak collectively for both of us because please, we were away with our children. I was vacationing. I was in New Orleans. He was in South Carolina. We were being great dads. We were looking after our children. But I came back and I watched the co-main event. I watched some other ones, but that one slipped through the net. So I didn't bring it up. And he's trying to belittle us, Lewis, on our own show.
Wow.
Trying to make us look stupid.
You know what? I'm going to take a step further. This is because of Harrington. Jordan James. We're banning those words from this show. We'll never discuss Jordan James again. In fact, next time Bisping has a little one-on-one with Dana White, he may have to throw in a little bit of negativity toward Jordan James with the big boss. And he's got a great relationship with Dana White because of Mike Harrington.
Don't ever do that again. Okay. If I choose not to say it, I don't want to say it. I don't want to talk about it. Maybe Jordan James is crying right now. Maybe he's getting a divorce. Maybe his wife is like, you're a fucking idiot. I told you not to make that bet.
You're fucking dead to us, just like you're dead to your wife.
Yeah, so there you go. I tell you what, you want to redeem yourself, Harrington?
Sure.
Tell us all about, and there's a nice little segue here. Now, I've got the segue of the year trophy, okay? But there's a segue to two stories. There's two stories on there which are related and linked, and you could seamlessly segue from one to the other. What stories do you think they are?
Okay. The story specifically from the Jane story?
No, from the notes that you compiled and sent to me. There's two stories in there that could be flawlessly segued. Listen, I'm just saying this is why you don't have a segue of the year trophy. Okay?
100%.
Hector Lombard and the Russian brawl.
Okay. Right? I want to see how you do both these segues, so I'm going to pop off.
What are you talking about? So Hector Lombard fought in Bare Knuckle FC at the weekend, and his next opponent came up, got in his face. Hector Lombard fucking battered him, right? In Russia at the weekend, there was an MMA event, and then it kicked off. There was a big, massive brawl. You know what I mean? There's a segue there. There's a similarity between the stories, but the difference is that in Russia, they just went, right, the two guys that started the fucking brawl, go backstage, get your gloves on, fucking warm up, then get yourself back in the ring. You got 30 minutes, and they juked it out, right?
That's pretty fucking cool. That's a great way to end a brawl.
Set the table for Lewis. Give us, and the people listening, go on, tell us the story, the details.
Yeah. Essentially, it's an amateur Russian MMA promotion. Some gentlemen jumped into the ring. A brawl ensues. During this brawl, two guys got hot and heavy. One thing leads to another. The shit talking. They decide they're going to go in the back, throw on the clubs, and do this thing for real.
All right, pause it. This is what I mean. This is obviously set up. Why would two random guys? Why would they give them microphones?
That's a good question, Lewis. I must admit, because I saw this over the weekend or last night or something, and I went on it and I was watching it, and the video was taking far too long to get to the brawl part. They speak Russian, right? And you know what I mean? I couldn't understand none of that. I'm like, I want to see the brawl. It was taking too long. I fucked it off. But you put it in the notes, so there it is. But Hector Lombard, I did see that. Who was his opponent that went in the ring? Who was that?
Believe it was Lorenzo Cain. I'll double check that right now.
Yeah, I want to see this video. I haven't seen this video. I'm very interested. Yeah. So Hector won, obviously, at BKFC.
Hector beat Joe Riggs, I believe it was. Joe Diesel Riggs. Mm. And then the irony of this situation is, listen, Hector Lombard's a wild man. When I was fighting, me and him nearly came to blows a few times. He's that guy. He will fight. You know, he's authentic. He's true to the character that he puts forward. You know, if he was on Bourbon Street, he would have definitely thrown back. That's a fact.
And he's an Olympic judo player. Is that what's his background?
Yeah. I think he represented Cuba.
It's just strange to me that, and I don't want to, you know, so the sort of like, I'm down to fucking throw down at any time, like that sort of attitude, and almost like, I don't want to say thuggy, but it kind of comes off that way, right? Like Hector Lombard, you seem jawing at people, and you know, you had your altercations with him. It's just almost, it doesn't seem like an Olympic athlete would sort of go down that path. It seems like when you're an Olympic athlete, it's just a different sort of lifestyle that you lead, but maybe not.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but maybe if you're rowing, you know, or you're a skier or something like that. But you just got to look at a lot of Olympic boxers that then become professional boxers. Yeah, Mike Tyson, right. Floyd Mayweather. You know, the list goes on and on and on. Do you know what I mean? They're not little pussycats. They're not all angels. Some of them might have even been to prison for crimes such as rape. You know? Bringing that up, but I'm just saying. I'm just playing the game.
Maybe a few of them never even got caught.
Whoa, what are you saying right now? So anyway, Hector Lombard, I've nicknamed him Poison Dwarf back in the day, but here we go. Here's the video. Check this out. These are good punches.
One in the ring. Oh, Jesus.
Wow. Yo, he wasn't ready for that. Homie wasn't ready for that.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, he fucking went for it. He threw two heavy, heavy shots. And the irony is, Joe Riggs, that Lombard just beat, was the guy that jumps in and breaks up the fight, which is fair play to Joe Riggs. That man's a good guy.
I mean, look, Lombard, I'll say the same thing we said to Joe Schilling earlier today. It's like, bro, unnecessary. He was just coming in to promote the next fight. Chill, Hector.
Yeah, let it go. No, Hector's like that. He's tried to fight me a few times because I remember I met him in an elevator. He got signed to the UFC. He was a Bellator champion and he got a pretty big contract. And I met him in the elevator at a UFC fight week. And I said, hey, Hector, how you doing? I shook his hand and he did the fucking classic. Squeeze your hand as hard as you can. You know what I mean?
I bet he had a crazy grip.
It hurt. It hurt my hand, I'm not gonna lie. And on the flip side, because like I'm left-handed, my left-handed squeeze is pretty good, but my right-handed, with the atrophy and the problem and the stenosis I have with my neck, is very weak, and you always gotta shake with your right hand. Do you know what I mean? So he squashed my hand to bits. And he was like, and he was like eyeballing me.
And you had to pretend that it didn't hurt.
And I'm like, oh, Mom, Rebecca, give me some ice. No, but so then I was the guest fighter. So I said, oh, little Poison Dwarf, Hector Lombard. Yeah, you know, listen, he's a tough guy. That's what they do. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what else have we got? It's just sort of surprising that, like, you know, it wasn't like he just showed up to him in the street and, like, got in his face. Like, he was going up to him to talk shit to obviously promote the next fight. Because look at his response, he was like, whoa, chill, what are you doing?
Yeah, I wonder if there'll be any repercussions from that. I mean, you got to be, if you're a professional fighter, when you square up to somebody, you don't necessarily expect, with bare knuckles on nonetheless, there wasn't even gloves, to get two punches in the face. And they were hard punches as well, you know. I wouldn't like to see it. I've got to choose my words better. But it's not a good look for the promotion, for Bare Knuckle FC, if you can call it a promotion, if you will. Even that, I think, is a bit of a grandiose term to use for them. They are a promotion, and they're doing things, and they seem to be getting a lot of media attention. But you can't have your fighters chinning people. Do you know what I mean? You can't have them just cracking people in the ring.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, it happens. We watched it happen with Masvidal and Leon Edwards, and now it's this big, crazy story. It's just a little different because that was like out of the ring, interviews, guys were heated. This was like the classic moment where a guy gets in the ring, he wins a title, whatever it is, he wins his big fight, and then the next guy that's going to challenge comes in. You take a moment, you take some pictures, you square off, you say, he says a good line, he says a good line, and then this guy starts swinging on him. It almost reminds me of, do you remember, oh, dude, it's fucking so funny. If you haven't seen it, it's the best. But Key and Peele, the MMA sketch.
I do like Key and Peele. I've seen a lot of their stuff. I find myself watching their YouTube channel here and there. What happens in the MMA one?
Dude, it's so fun. I'll send it to you at the end. We'll put a link to it. Obviously, we can't play their stuff in this video, but it's hilarious. But the one guy, he's just doing the thing. He's like, I'm going to kick your ass, old man. And the other one, the bald guy, he's like playing a Brazilian character. And he's like, God has told me that I have to kill you with my bare hands. And he's taking it really over the top serious. And then at one point, the other guy's like, hey, man, he knows what you're trying to promote, a fight, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I have seen that. And he's like, what the fuck? Yeah, he's like, whoa, this guy's crazy. Yeah, no. It's hilarious. No, they are very funny. All right, let's hear from one of our sponsors, IP Vanish. We are welcoming them back to today's show. IP Vanish have been a longtime sponsor of ours, so it's great to have them back. So let me tell you about IP Vanish. If you care about the security of your online activity, the easiest way to protect yourself is with IP Vanish VPN. What is VPN? It is a virtual private network. And this one is rated 4.5 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot. IP Vanish provides encrypted connections for all your internet traffic, helping to prevent websites, Wi-Fi providers, and even hackers from intercepting your data. And it's very, very important in this day and age. Of course, you don't want people hacking into your bank account, hacking into your Instagram. You know, people are always trying to do that, trying to get into all your little, I don't know what clubs you're a member of, what things you're logged into on your internet. But these people, it's very, very simple in this day and age with a virtual private network. It's way more difficult, if not impossible, Lewis.
It's funny you say that. You're like, oh, I don't know what you belong to and what clubs you belong to. Good. And I want to keep it that way. I don't want Michael Bisping to know. I don't want hackers to know. I don't want the government to know. I want everyone to get out of my business. And this is a great way to do it. There's also certain websites. If you ever noticed, Bisping, you've been traveling and you're like, wait, I can't get into certain websites. If you're using a VPN, a lot of the time you can.
Yeah. Also, if you ever go to Fight Island, there's no porn on Abu Dhabi, okay? VPN, baby. Cruise away. Fucking browse away. Fill your boots. Go crazy. IP Vanish. If, I'm telling you, that's not all they do. They do many, many other things. They will protect your bank data, your personal data, et cetera, but that's just another little fringe benefit, Lewis.
Now, listen to me. You want to try this out. Anybody who knows about using the internet uses a VPN, and you can help keep your financial details, personal information, and online activity safe from threats with IP Vanish. And right now you can get started with this limited time offer. Save 50% off monthly and annual subscriptions by going to ipvanish.com/believe. One more time, that's ipvanish.com/believe, all lowercase. Save 50% on monthly and annual subscriptions. Okay, Mike, real quick before we move on, let's just plug a couple things up. Number one, go to our iTunes, leave us a 5-star rating, positive review. We love the great reviews. Subscribe right there. You get the brand new episodes right to your phone. Or subscribe on YouTube. Our YouTube channel gets all the latest episodes, the latest 20 episodes are right there. And then hit the notification button. You get a brand new notification every time we have a new episode that drops live, which is typically Monday and Thursday nights at midnight Eastern. You can get the entire On Demand library, all the episodes that we've ever done, all ad-free, uncensored, and in one place, gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use that promo code BYM. Get a 7-day free trial. Get access to everything. And also, obviously, you want to come and see Michael Bisping, Tales from the Octagon, his one-man show, /two-man show, wink, wink, coming to the UK all this October, the beginning of October. Go to myticket.co.uk.
Yes.
Yes. Good.
Yes.
LewisofSkanks.com. Lots of other dates coming up. I'll be in Bridgeport, Connecticut with The Depraved and some other shows. Also, San Diego coming up at the end of July and Uncle Vinny's Comedy Club in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Lots of other dates coming up. LewisofSkanks.com. And yeah, that's that.
And if you do want to buy a t-shirt, support the show,
oh, yes.
bymmerch.com. You'll be able to buy a shirt that neither Lewis or I is wearing right now, but they are selling very, very fast. We've got new designs coming soon as well. The Devil's Avocado shirt has been flying off the shelves, as it were. So thank you all to those people that bought one, bymmerch.com. Yes, Lewis?
And also go, if you guys haven't yet, please download the Timmy Fit app right now. In the description, you'll see a link for the TimmyFit app. Join the BYM competition where you get to earn cryptocurrency just for losing weight, just for running, biking, exercising. You earn cryptocurrency. We're doing special prizes right now, over $500 in cash prizes for the BYM community. So right now, join the TimmyFit BYM competition, but make sure you download that TimmyFit app. The link is in the episode description.
T-I-M-I, Timmy. Timmy Fit. Latin for honor, I do believe. You know, I'm a little off of my Latin interpretations these days, you know, but I do believe it means honor. But still, anyway, back to the stuff. Back to the MMA, the arts of mixed martial. Fedor Emelianenko, the last emperor. The last time we saw him fight. See that segue as well? 2019. What did he do in 2019? He knocked out Quinton Rampage Jackson in the first round, 2 minutes 44. Put Rampage to sleep, I believe, or just knocked him out, put him down pretty badly. I forget. But that was surprising. I was kind of worried for Fedor there because Rampage is a big, hard-headed, hard-punching son of a bitch. You know what I mean? He's a tough guy. And Fedor went out there and did him. But I thought maybe that would be the last time that we would see him. But no, Fedor Emelianenko is coming back. Harrington, can you elaborate, give us some extra details? Wants to fight, I believe, in Russia and a few well-known guys. I've thrown their names into the hat.
Yeah, so it's actually going to be Bellator's first trip to Russia. They're bringing Fedor back out. Like you said, his last time out was against Quentin Rampage Jackson. Haven't seen him in quite some time. So yeah, this is like the big marquee name. And three former UFC champions are reportedly in the running to fight him on that Russian card. Alistair Overeem, Junior Dos Santos, and Josh Barnett.
Got to be Josh Barnett. I can't believe that those two haven't fought before. Josh Barnett and Fedor, both been around.
Alistair hasn't fought him either?
No, I don't believe so. Who was the third one as well? Overeem.
Dos Santos.
Oh, Dos Santos. I mean, listen, they'd all be great. But the only reason I say Josh Barnett is because he was competing in Pride back in the day. So was Alistair Overeem as well, pardon me. But still, Josh Barnett, the War Master against Fedor, that'd just be such a great old school clash. I would love to see that. But it's interesting, Fedor at 42 years old, you know, he's teased retirement many times. Remember, what was it? He was like undefeatable. Had that one cut loss back in his early day against TK, Toyoshi Kasaka. But then he lost to Fabrizio Verdun. Remember that one on Strikeforce? Yeah. Then he got beat by Antonio Silva. Then he got knocked out against Dan Henderson. And I thought that was that. Thought he was done, but he came back. Did well for a while. Got knocked out against Ryan Bader. I think that surprised everybody.
Yeah, well, he's never really not looked good, even when he loses and gets knocked out, right? When he got knocked out to Dan Henderson, if you remember, Dan dropped that H-bomb, and he was out for a half a second, and like a robot, he was like, I'm back. And it was fucking wild. They're like, God damn, dude. Fedor, he always looks explosive. He never looks like he's in very good shape, but he always looks like Fedor. He always looks like this Russian cyborg that keeps on coming forward. Really, really scary striking, really scary grappling. Sort of was the complete package back in Pride before, you know, everyone was a complete package. Back when there was almost like, you know, genres and segregation and MMA and style still. Out of everyone that name there, though, I'm least interested in seeing Josh Barnett versus Fedor.
No way. Come on. Listen, you don't know shit about MMA, Lewis. Josh Barnett, that would be an amazing fight because, I think Fedor would have the advantage in striking, but in the grappling department, that gets very, very interesting. But Josh is a big guy. I've trained with Josh on multiple occasions down at CSW with Eric Paulson, pardon me. Yeah, no, that'd be an amazing fight. It'd just be a good old school throwback. Junior Dos Santos will be fun. Of course, Alistair Overeem would be good as well. But I don't know. I think I saw a tweet from Josh Barnett. He's, you know, throwing his name out there. That'd be fun. I'd like to see that.
I'm just saying, like, here's the thing. When Fedor comes back, and look, Josh Barnett's great. Josh Barnett is a legend, okay? And I'm not hating on him. The last time we saw Josh Barnett fight was Andrei Arlovsky, 2016. I just want to see Fedor fight somebody a little bit more. I don't want to relevant. Say relevant because that's disrespectful to Josh Barnett. It's not relevance because is Junior Dos Santos truly relevant in the heavyweight division anymore? You know, he left the UFC, went over to Bellator. Alistair just got cut from the UFC as well. So when you say relevant, I feel like guys who are competing for a UFC title are truly relevant, right? But more recently relevant, more, you know, a little bit. Look, Junior Dos Santos is, in my opinion, the best matchup there because it is the closest thing we're going to get to see to Fedor competing in modern-day UFC, right? Alistair's old school. They're from the same generation. I think Junior's from a generation or two after the fact. And I think I'd like to see Fedor test himself against Junior Dos Santos, and that's just a firecracker of a fight.
It is, and I agree with what you're saying there as well. And let's not forget, and that, you know, no disrespect to Josh Barnett, but he's had a habit of not having fights go ahead. You know, remember the Affliction series of fights back in the day? He tested positive. I forget.
That's why Cormier subbed for him, right?
Oh, sorry. You're talking about, that's Strikeforce.
Strikeforce.
I don't know if he subbed for Josh Barnett. Did he sub for Josh Barnett? I'm not sure, but I know he was a sub. But then, Josh Barnett was supposed to fight somebody. Who was he meant to fight? Maybe Tim Sylvie or somebody on Affliction, but he tested positive, and then the whole event got scrapped. Mm. And then just recently, he was supposed to fight in Hawaii, I believe, for Bellator, and he tested positive again, and that event got scrapped, I think, or they threw in some shitty main event. So, yeah, maybe Bellator are like, listen, there's the first event in Russia. We can't have you messing it up. Or flip side, Devil's Avocado just throwing wild accusations out there. Maybe they're like, this is Russia, no problem. Josh, you come here, my friend. You take all the steroids you like. Fedor, he'll also be taking many steroids. No problem. He has ass like dartboard. No problem. You come here. So, yeah, so maybe that's the fight that they do. And they both walk in the ring looking like Ivan fucking Drago.
If he can take steroids and I can take steroids, maybe we all can take steroids.
We all just take the fucking steroids, bro, okay? You know, speaking of Russian accents, speaking like that, Khamzat Chimaev, he's been making news again, of course. Hasn't fought for quite some time since he knocked out Gerald Mirchart, got tied to a lot of people. The fight's never happened. He got COVID. He had long-lasting issues. But, and Harrington, I didn't see this. I'm only going off your notes, and well done for spotting this one. But Luke Rockhold says, and realistically, I should ask Luke to shed some light on this, but Luke Rockhold said that he was offered to fight Khamzat twice, and Khamzat turned him down twice.
Yeah, so apparently the story Luke Rockhold gave is that, you know, he was offered two different main event slots fighting Khamzat Chimaev. He agreed to the first date. It got, you know, moved to another date or something happened. And again, Khamzat said, you know, no, he's not going to take that date. Instead, he's going to return at 170 pounds. You know, so before he was saying, you know, I'll fight anybody at 170, anybody at 185. He wanted to take on Israel Adesanya, talked about going up 205 to fight Jan Blachowicz. You know, now he's saying he's pretty firmly in the welterweight camp. And Rockhold made the point, hey, I thought you were the guy, you know, who's willing to fight anybody. So.
So what are you insinuating, Harrington? Are you insinuating that a very well-respected, world-class fighter that has taken the MMA world by storm, are you calling him a coward? Is that what's going on right here?
I'm not the one who's calling him that. And to be fair, Luke Rockhold did say with all respect before he said this. But
well, that's okay. Well, yeah, as long as you say with all due respect, you can say whatever you want after
With all
that.
Due respect, Bespin, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, with all due respect, when I catch that fucking kid in that band in New Orleans, I'm going to rip his fucking head
That's
off.
What he said right before he hit you. He was like, with all due respect, crack.
With all due respect, no one's going to suck my dick. Boom. what we were talking about, yeah, Khamzat, Luke Rockhold. That fight doesn't make sense anyway. I mean, listen, would I watch it? Yeah. Would it be fun? Yes. But for Khamzat, well, he did fight at middleweight, though. Middleweight and 170. He should be at 170. He's a big 170 welterweight, but he's a little small for middle, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he's also a little small for the extremely large and talented Luke Rockhold. What a step up, right? I understand why Khamzat would not take the Luke Rockhold fight.
Brother, I have three fights in 3 days. Then I have COVID. No, brother, listen, I smash you, but not today.
I mean, dude, Luke is huge. I mean, he's massive. When we saw Luke at Ruka, I was like, holy shit, dude. He's so tall and he's so, you know, just built like a fucking brick shit house.
Killer abs.
Just hot, just weird smells, as fuck, dude.
Smells good.
He smells great. He's got great hair. His dog's cute. I'm telling you, everyone else is like warming up and Luke's like breakdancing on the mats. And you're like, all right, dude, we get it, Luke. You're hotter than everybody here. You could fuck all of our girlfriends.
He wasn't breakdancing, but he was doing some kind of weird warm-up routine, semi-naked. But you mentioned the dog. Listen, I'm just going to throw this out there. If you've got a dog and you go to a gym environment, dogs lick their own balls.
No. We want to get Luke on the show.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I don't want to talk shit about Ruka. Just keep the dog off the mats, Luke. Keep that fucking slut Lucy to herself, okay? Keep the dog off the mat. The dog's running around. It's running roughshod around the gym. God knows what Lucy's been
doing. That bitch had no loyalty. She was up everyone's ass.
She really was. She really was. We got one more story. What was it, Harrington? We said we're going to talk about Kamzat. We're going to talk about Rockhold, Fedor Emelianenko. What was Severin. The other one?
No, not Dan Severn.
Dom Fry. Another
Dom
legendary
Fry.
Heavyweight. Yeah.
Tell us about Dom Fry.
So he went on Joe Rogan, and he said, you know, he let Joe know he's not only thinking about a comeback, he's thinking about fighting the toughest guy there is to fight. I'll let Don talk about it.
Come on.
Really? Shit, yeah, Joe.
I love it.
Shit, yeah. I mean, I'd love to fight Ngannou.
Ngannou?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. He's amazing, yeah.
Wouldn't it be better to fight someone your age?
Why? Yeah. They don't have the belt, do they? Make a comeback. You know?
Really?
Shit,
oh, my God. Oh, my God.
There ain't no way a black man is beating me. Not today.
Hey, fucking. I'm trying to do the math here. He was born in 1965, 35, 55, 56 years old. Listen, I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm 42. Love Dom Fry. Man's a legend. I hope to look better than Dom Fry. Just play that tape again. And he sounds like he's fucking 90. Sounds like he's about to die. Do not fight Dom Fry. Do not fight Francis Ngannou, please. He doesn't look too bad there. It's just a sound.
You know? Really?
Shit, yeah, Joe.
I love it.
Shit, yeah. I mean, I'd love to fight Ngannou.
Ngannou?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't like the way that he says his name either.
Yeah, it's Ngannou. Yeah, that's not good. That's not good, yeah. Moving on.
I just can't not say it, Bisping.
But he last fought in 2011. So he hasn't fought in 10 years against Ruben Villarreal. I remember that guy. Warpath, I think.
Yeah, pro wrestler Warpath, yeah.
Yeah. I know him because I think he fought Rico Rodriguez in England back in the day. I don't think he's serious. He's messing around there. But God bless. He's a character. He's fucking awesome. Don Fry's a
I think he would fight him if given the opportunity.
Oh, for sure. If he had a little whiskey in him and he's, you know, and in the right scenario, but there's no way. And by the way, that wouldn't even get sanctioned.
No, not at all. Of course. But I think when you're talking to Don Fry in his mind, he goes, yeah, I'd fight him. Well, I 100% believe him. I think if you really asked him, I don't think he believes that he could beat Ngannou, but I think he'd go in there and challenge him. And there's just one of the greatest, just like highlight reels from old school MMA is who was it? Don Fry versus
the
Asian guy with the blonde hair, and they just grab each other with a Muay Thai collar and Takayama.
Crack each other. It's all awesome. It looks fake. It looks fake.
Pro wrestling.
That's how good it was. Yeah, no, Don Fry. I mean, he's awesome. The thing is, you know, Don Fry there. I mean, he's 55, so he's not that old. I thought he was older than that. To be fair, it doesn't go away. You know what I mean? So when he's saying that, he means that probably, I'd say, in that moment right there. Now, of course, if it came, let's just say for whatever imaginary scenario, hypothetically, it kind of evolved into something, be like, no, this is crazy. But in that situation, you know, if you're in a bar or whatever, he'll throw down with anyone. You know, fighters will, you know, just because you get older, the voice in your head stays the same. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm still, the voice in my mind is still the same as when I was 20 years old. All right, it wasn't on Saturday night when I shit my pants when I got assaulted, you know, but most of the time, I've still got that 20-year-old voice in my head.
Devil and angel on your shoulder.
Kill him. Like,
Bisping, get the fuck out of here. You're too old for this shit.
No, but you know what I mean? So Don Fry in his mind, yeah, he's an older dude and he's been around and no doubt he's got tons of injuries and conditions and things like that. But in his mind, he's like, yeah, fuck it. I'll throw down with these big boys. Why wouldn't he? You
of
know?
Of course. And honestly, think about Don Fry to this day. Think about how many, like, the average man, he can probably beat the shit out of the average guy in a massive, massive way. I know he's all beat up. He's had, like, 3 heart attacks. He's almost died a couple times. But he's still a huge, like, that strength doesn't go. He's got that wrestling background. He's just this big, scary, tough dude.
What do you think would have happened if that guy assaulted Don Fry on Bourbon Street?
I think Don Fry would have shoved a trombone up his ass.
Yeah, no, he fucking would have done
it. Don Fry was not taking it on the chin like Michael Bisping. He's
not many people can, Lewis. Not many people can. I'm just looking at his mixed martial kickboxing record. I didn't know. One fight. That's why I didn't know about it. 20 wins, 9 losses. Let's have a look. Some of the big names on here. Ah, well, what? Mark Coleman. Yeah. Yeah, old school guy, Ken Shamrock. But yeah, there you go. All right, well, listen, that's the show. Thursday, we're going to come back. We've got some questions, though, in a minute that Brian's going to tee up for us in a second. I do believe we've got Misha Tate. Misha Cupcake Tate coming back. I think she fights July 17th. I'll be commentating that card. So we get to talk to Misha on Thursday, I believe. Well, she was working for ONE FC, like vice president or something like that. She was living out in Singapore for a while, had a baby, and decided she wanted to come back to mixed martial arts. So we'll hear all about that on Thursday. So thank you, Misha, in advance. But Brian, what have we got? We got any good questions this week?
Yeah, we got one here from Mr. Richard Rodriguez. What up, guys? I'm back. Yo, question to Mike. Who's your favorite English or UK soccer player? Question to Lewis. Who's your all-time favorite soccer player? And then question for all you guys. How much money would it take for the Believers to raise to shave Brian's head? Let me know.
So, I'm going to go out on a limb. Can you name three soccer players, Lewis?
David Beckham.
Who's your favorite? Who's your favorite then?
David Beckham.
Who's your second favorite?
Pele.
Pele. Third favorite.
My third favorite is obviously Gavin Rossdale, the lead singer of the band Bush, who is a former professional soccer player, I believe.
Well, I would not have picked that one, that's for sure. Yeah, I'm sitting here like I'm some kind of aficionado on football, but I'm not. I can't name too many people. In fact, England are competing right now in the Euro. We're doing okay. We've played Germany tomorrow, I think, so best of luck to the lads out there. But favorite English soccer player? I don't have one. I do not have one. Paul Gascoigne. There you go. I'm only saying that because Paul Gascoigne's always... He's an alcoholic, God bless him, but he's funny. He's a funny, funny guy. Jamie Varney. David Beckham. No, it's not David Beckham. I always liked the bad boys. I liked Eric Cantona back in the day when he played for Manchester United, when he flying kicked someone. But anyway, enough of that because I don't know fuck all about soccer, football as we call it. But I do want to know this about Brian's hair. But Brian, this is more of a question for you than it is for us. Listen, how much is it going to cost to shave your head?
Well, Mike, seeing as how I'm going to be meme stock millionaire in the next few months, it's going to take quite a bit of money to cut my hair.
No.
It'll probably take you about 20 shares of AMC.
All right. And what is the current share price of AMC?
Oh, $3. I mean, like when we cash out. But right now it's like pushing $60. Okay, a share, and if you guys would have bought in when I told you to.
I know, I didn't. That's why I was trying to stop you, because it's like anytime you mention this AMC stock with Brian, he goes off on a tangent, and I'm like, oh, God, I wish I'd never said anything. Brian, give me a number. Never mind the AMC stock. I know you're partial to your hair. You've been growing it out for a long time, but since I've known you, you've had the same hairstyle. So have I, to be fair. But you got to mix it up. You know what I mean? I think you'd look good with a little trim. You know what I mean? How much do we need to raise in the pot for you to shave your head?
How much is a Model 3? It's like $35,000.
What, a
That's
Tesla?
Much? No, yeah. Shut up.
I know. If I said to you $5,000, right? No. If I say
$10,000.
No, $1,000, cold hard cash. I'll Venmo it to you right now to shave your head. Would you do it?
$1,000? No, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. $5,000. No. 10,000 cash right now, I think you would. 10,000 on the table, cash on the table, I think you'd do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hair grows back. You know what I mean? How long did
that take? No, it doesn't, you piece of shit. I shaved my shit. I started going a little bit when I was 18. I was like, let me shave it. By the time, it never came back. I had long hair. I had like long curly hair, and it started receding a little bit. When I shaved it, it completely, nothing ever came back. It was completely gone. George Jefferson style.
I'm actually trying to grow mine out right now. I don't mean, you know, like Brian style, but just so I can slick it back. So a little fresher hairstyle, and then it'll all be shaved around the sides. A little bit different, so I'm growing it out right now. But I was thinking about shaving it recently just because I'm bored. That's why I'm kind of growing it out a little bit. But Brian, I think we should get together a little GoFundMe. It seems you can do a fucking GoFundMe for anything these days.
Hey, man,
and if you get to $5,000, you have to shave your head.
I said no to five. I would not do it for $5,000.
$5,000 in a signed book.
Oh,
that's my last
man.
Offer.
All right, fine.
Wow.
All right, yeah. I mean, shit. If they want to raise me $5,000 to shave my head, fine.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
All right. Fine. All right. Well, listen, I think that's the end of the show. Guys, thank you for listening. Tell your friends, subscribe, all that good stuff. Main thing is take care of yourself. Be well. Be happy. Spread love. Spread joy. You know, when you go around the place, do unto others as you would like done unto you, Lewis.
But do it first.
Do it harder and faster.
It's getting sexy.
With a regular rhythm.
Or maybe do it slower. Maybe do it a little more rhythm.
Depends. Yeah. Depends. But whatever you do, don't get arrested.
You know what? Just stay safe. Just, stay legal.
Just do it. Chew it and do it. Anyway, yeah. On that note, we're going to go. Take care. See you on Thursday.